Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Tuesday, April 5th, 2022. The leader of a paramilitary group in Sudan has pleaded not guilty to 31 counts of crimes allegedly committed in Darfur.
What has hit me every time I've interacted with Darfuris, and actually survivors throughout the world, is their dignity and remarkable resilience.
And the Troika countries are asking President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar to sit down and talk.
But for me, one of the most important commitments is to holding more regular meetings between the principals, between the President, the First Vice President, and the other Vice Presidents.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An alleged former militia leader in Sudan's Darfur region has pleaded not guilty to 31 charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity. The trial of the militia leader known as Ali Kusheb is the first at the International Criminal Court to deal with the Darfur conflict. From Paris, Lisha Brand has more for VOA.
Pursuant to Article 8.2c, subparagraph 1.
Wearing a blue suit, Ali Mohammed Ali Abdelrahman sat with folded arms as he listened to a long list of atrocities he allegedly participated in nearly two decades ago. Speaking here through a translator, he denied the charges against him.
I reject all of these charges. I am innocent of all of these charges. I am not accused of any of these charges.
International Criminal Court prosecutor Karim Khan offered a very different take. He outlined brutalities supposedly committed by Abdelrahman and other alleged members of Sudan's feared Janjaweed militia in 2003 and 2004.
Rapes against women and girls, children being targeted and attacked and abducted, men and boys, amongst others, being executed and killed, homes being wantonly destroyed, people fleeing with nothing, for many, their lives never to be the same again.
This is the first trial at the Hague-based criminal court dealing with the Darfur conflict, which the United Nations says killed roughly 300,000 people and displaced some 2.5 million others. It's also the first trial resulting from a UN Security Council referral to the ICC.
This is a really important moment.
Elise Kepler is Associate International Justice Director at Human Rights Watch.
It's not the end. In fact, it's really just a beginning. But we have not seen any meaningful accountability for crimes in Darfur. And victims have been clamoring to see justice, that justice is such an important step.
Also known as Ali Kusheb, Abdelrahman was considered a senior Janjaweed member. The militia group was fighting non-Arab rebels who had launched a revolt complaining of discrimination. Rights groups claim the Janjaweed's response was a deliberate act of ethnic cleansing. Abdelrahman allegedly played a key role in Janjaweed attacks against at least four villages. Prosecutor Khan aired clips of interviews of alleged witnesses and victims of the attacks.
What has hit me every time I've interacted with Darfuris and actually survivors throughout the world is their dignity and remarkable resilience.
The trial comes amid an uptick of violence in Darfur and unrest across Sudan following a military coup last October. Sudan's former president, Omar al-Bashir, and three others are also being sought by the ICC for alleged war crimes in Darfur. Khartoum has yet to hand them over. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
As we just heard, Kusheb's trial kicked off today at the International Criminal Court in The Hague, and will run over the course of the coming days, where the persecution witnesses and representatives of victims will be heard. He and four others are accused of dozens of counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity committed as part of former President Omar al-Bashir's counterinsurgency strategy in Darfur. In addition to those charges, Bashir, who is in prison in Khartoum, is accused of genocide. For VOA News, Nabil Biyajo has more from Washington.
Sudanese militia leader Abdurrahman is accused of committing war crimes in Darfur nearly 20 years ago. ICC spokesperson Fadi El Abdullah told VOA Today that Abdurrahman pleaded not guilty to all 31 charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity he allegedly committed in 2003 and 2004.
The trial started with the reading of the charges against Mr. Abdurrahman. The chamber was satisfied that the accused understood the nature of the charges. He pled not guilty to all the charges.
Abdurrahman, also known as Kusheib, is represented at the trial by Principal Counsel Tri Lauchi and Associate Counsel Ian Edwards. ICC General Prosecutor Karim Khan took the floor at the start of the trial and presented a statement before Judge Joanna Corner, Presiding Judge Rene Alapini Ganso, and Judge Altea Viola Alexis Windsor.
This will be followed by a short unsworn statement by the accused and a legal representative of the victims, lawyers Natalie von Vistinghausen, Nasser Mohammed Amin, and Anand Shah will also make short remarks.
John Brandegast, who is co-founder of The Sentry, an organization that focuses on war crimes and war-linked illicit finances, released a statement ahead of the trial saying impunity for crimes committed in Darfur is at the root of Sudan's instability today. The militia in which Kusheib was a leader committed genocidal crimes and until this moment has been subject to almost no accountability. It's no surprise then that Sudan continues to be marked by dictatorship, kleptocracy and serious human rights abuses, said Brandegast in a statement. He also said Kusheib's trial is a chance to begin to create some level of consequence for the commission of horrific crimes and that the case has ramifications beyond one man's guilt, saying it can help lay the groundwork for justice on behalf of Darfur's victims and survivors. Al-Abdullah says expert witnesses in the case against Kusheib will begin testifying before the court on Wednesday.
The trial, of course, before the ICC may take some time, several months, for sure, taking into account the nature of the charges and the amount of evidence that will have to be presented to the judges for them to decide whether or not there is a reasonable doubt about the guilt of the accused.
In their opening statements, prosecutors said witnesses told of seeing Abdurrahman order his men to torture and even kill men who were community leaders in Darfur. Witnesses to alleged crimes committed in Darfur will be given a chance to testify before the court detailing attacks carried out by Kusheib and his forces on villages in Darfur. Here is a prosecutor speaking at the ICC this past hour.
The chamber will hear from them that the members of the militia Janjaweed and GOS forces, that they were well armed. They came into the areas on land cruisers, which had dushkas atop them, and some of the attackers had Kalashnikovs, bladed weapons, and witness 986 in particular will speak about some of the attackers carrying fire sticks. The witnesses will also speak about men who were detained and how the attackers called them by various names, such as Abid, as explained earlier, meaning slave, Kadim, which is in English servant, and speaking to them using the term Nuba. One witness, Your Honor, will further explain that they were told by the attackers that they were sent to kill every black thing except the Laloba and the Labe trees, which are also black.
On June the 9th, 2020, Abdurrahman was transferred to the ICC's custody after surrendering himself voluntarily in the Central African Republic. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biyajo in Washington.
Some internal displaced persons or IDPs living in Sudan's Darfur region have welcomed the opening of the trial of Ali Mohammed Abdurrahman, also known as Ali Kusheib, at the International Criminal Court. The IDPs describe the trial as a positive move towards achieving justice for their loved ones killed during the conflict in Darfur. Some IDPs say other individuals charged with war crimes or genocide should be brought to the court, including former President Omar Hassan al-Bashir. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Some IDPs living in Kalma Kam in Sudan's West Darfur state are expressing their joy over the start of Ali Kosheb's trial today in The Hague, saying justice will finally be served. Speaking to this program from inside the Kam in Darfur, Kam leader Yakub Ahmed says Kosheb's trial has given IDPs and refugees hope and trust in the ICC.
When justice is served, nobody will try to take the law into his own hands. This has given us hope that justice will finally be served. We have trust in the ICC and we have been following up with them since day one.
Another IDP, Hanan Hassan Khatir from Kalma Camp, expressed her happiness after seeing Kosheb in the Hague courtroom. Khatir says she lost her husband in 2003, leaving her with six children. She says her oldest son was killed during the conflict in 2017.
I do not believe my ears that such a trial would have been carried out. But today I am excited that Ali Kosheb has finally been tried in the court of law. This man has committed a lot of mass killing, ethnic cleansing. Some of us have been raped publicly in front of our fathers and husbands. Our hope is that all others involved in committing crimes against our people in Darfur should be taken to ICC.
Khatir says, even though trying Kosheb is a big step forward, there is a need to charge all alleged perpetrators in a court of law for crimes committed against civilians. Adam Rijal is the spokesperson for the Coordination Office of IDPs and Refugees in Darfur. Rijal says, despite the ongoing court proceedings in The Hague, IDPs across Darfur continue to experience attack, killings and other forms of atrocities, and is calling on the Sudanese authorities to stop the attacks and allow civilians to move freely.
There has been an increase in human rights violations that have been carried out by the Janjaweed militia in Darfur. They continue to carry out mass killings, rape, forceful displacement, threat and looting of property of the civilians. These atrocities have continued to happen even up to today.
Despite the peace agreement signed between the government and some armed groups in Darfur over a year ago, Rijal says the area remains unstable. He also says the people of Darfur will be gratified if they see former President Omar al-Bashir and others who have been indicted by the ICC appear before the court as well, adding they don't trust the local Sudanese judiciary system.
All the court trials that have been carried out in Sudan have proved that the Sudanese authorities are not capable of carrying out transparent and just trials. They have failed to protect the IDPs as the Janjaweed militia has continued to attack them in several locations across Darfur.
Al-Bashir was indicted by the International Criminal Court in 2009 over alleged atrocities committed by his government, but remains in prison in Khartoum after being found guilty on corruption charges. According to the United Nations, at least 300,000 people were killed and 2.7 million others from Darfur were displaced during war from 2003 to 2008. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, the countries of Troika are calling on South Sudanese leaders to sit down and talk. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we look at pollution. The World Health Organization reports 13 million people die every year from environmental causes, including more than 7 million who are killed each year from exposure to air pollution. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
New data released by the World Health Organization confirms that practically the whole world is breathing in unhealthy air. The WHO is calling for urgent action to curb the use of fossil fuels to reduce air pollution levels. This, it says, threatens the health of billions of people, leading to the preventable deaths of millions. Sophie Gumi is technical officer in WHO's Department of Environment, Climate Change, and Health. She says the data show air quality is poorest, notably in the Eastern Mediterranean, Southeast Asian, and African regions.
Most of the 7 million deaths, they come from low and middle income countries. Indeed, they do. It doesn't mean that in the high income countries are not impacted. When we are using mortality to calculate the impact of air pollution on health, however, we are very much aware that you should actually count for morbidity. I mean, all the disease that it creates, there are a lot of costs associated with air pollution, which does not necessarily capture in the death.
The WHO report says significant harm is being done by even low level of many air pollutants. It says particulate matter can penetrate deep into the lungs and enter the bloodstream. This can cause cardiovascular disease, stroke, and respiratory impacts. It says nitrogen oxide, or NO2, can cause asthma and other respiratory diseases. The director of WHO's Department of Environment, Climate Change, and Health, Maria Nera, says particulate matter can affect almost every organ in the body. She calls this a major health issue, one which overlaps with the causes of climate change. As such, she says, the causes of air pollution should be tackled in a similar fashion.
We need to accelerate the transition to clean, modern, and sustainable renewable sources of energy. I think we will all agree that our dependence on fossil fuels for generating our energy needs to change if we want to protect our health.
WHO recommends measures including building safe and affordable public transport systems, implementing stricter vehicle emissions, investing in energy efficient housing and power generation, and improving industry and municipal waste management. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway, known as the Troika, are welcoming the recent agreement signed by the SPLM-IN government, the SPLM-IN opposition, and the South Sudan Opposition Alliance on the command structure of the unified forces. One South Sudanese political commentator dismissed the deal, calling it an attempt to buy time. For VOA News, Wake Simon Udu reports from Juba.
In a statement issued on Tuesday, the Troika countries embraced Sunday's agreement and urged the parties to recommit themselves to implement it to move forward with Chapter 2 of the revitalized peace deal, which covers security arrangements. Speaking on the Troika's behalf, Johnny Baxter, the UK ambassador to South Sudan, commended what he calls the party's spirit of compromise and praised them for recommitting to a ceasefire. The Troika also welcomes the SPLM-IN opposition's decision to get back to the security mechanism meetings. Baxter says the only way to break the cycle of subnational violence and defections is to complete the unification of forces.
But for me, one of the most important commitments is to holding more regular meetings between the principals, between the president, the first vice president, and the other vice presidents. And I think this agreement shows just how important, how valuable it is that South Sudanese political leaders come together. And I want to underline the symbolism of the president and the first vice president being photographed together should not be undervalued. That made a really big difference.
Baxter says the deal also demonstrates that South Sudanese leaders seem to realize that implementing the 2018 peace deal is the only way to bring the country back on the track of peace and stability.
With less than a year left of this transitional period, really important that the progress on the peace agreement gets taken forward quickly. And we need to make sure that the momentum that this has generated carries on. And we, the Troika, will continue supporting the parties to take this forward, but particularly supporting the people of South Sudan to ensure that they get the peace and the improvements that they so deserve.
Guarantors of the peace agreement have described the security arrangements as one of the most important parts of the deal, but its implementation has lagged far behind schedule. South Sudanese human rights lawyer Phillips Anyangong calls the recent agreement a big joke. He says it's merely an attempt by the parties to buy time and extend the transitional period.
We don't need to see documents being signed, we don't need to see agreements being signed, we don't need to see parties converging, wasting resources, we don't need to see the involvement of guarantors, Sudan, Uganda, we don't need to see them. We want the parties to get to the agreement, get to the details of the agreement. These are documents for all of us, it's a document that's written in English, it's not written in French, it's not written in Spanish, it's something that can be picked by the parties and implemented as it is. We don't need God to fall from heaven to have this thing implemented.
Anyang says the parties simply lack the political will needed to implement the peace agreement. He says despite the recent deal on the army's command structure, there is still no trust among the parties, which is necessary to move forward to implement the agreement.
The tributes seem to be totally wasting of time. They gave reason that they lack funds. That's why the forces were never graduated. That's why some of the institutions were never formed, were never established. They gave reason that there were so many sanctions, arms embargo, and stuff like that. We asked them today that were these questions or were these difficulties resolved or answered? Do we have money now to implement the agreement? Were the sanctions lifted for us to implement the agreement or for them to implement the agreement?
The parties also recently agreed on an implementation matrix for the command structure. Senior officers of the SPLM-IO and South Sudan Opposition Alliance shall be appointed through a presidential order into the unified command structure within 1 week, and unified forces shall graduate within 2 months. President Kiir and his first deputy, the head of the SPLM-IO, Riek Machar, held a one-to-one meeting in Juba on Monday when both leaders recommitted to implementing the security arrangements. Kiir and Machar also discussed efforts to implement the new security matrix, and the president asked Machar to present names of security officers from his party that will be appointed to command positions in the necessary unified forces. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Addis Ababa, where the case of a journalist for the Associate Press accused of abetting a government-designated terrorist group for reporting on rebels highlights Ethiopia's decline in media freedom. VOA's Salim Solomon reports.
Amir Aman Kiaro is back home with his family after a four-month ordeal in an Ethiopian prison. But the video journalist for the Associated Press could still face jail if convicted of violating anti-terrorism and wartime state of emergency laws. First arrested in November, Amir is accused of illegally communicating with members of a group the government designated as a terrorist organization. Under a state of emergency that was in place until February, journalists could be penalized for interviewing members of armed groups, including the Oromo Liberation Army. Amir and a freelancer, Thomas Ingida, were detained but never charged, the AP says. Ian Phillips, vice president of international news at the Associated Press, says the case shows how journalism is being criminalized and reporters harassed in the country. He emphasized that Amir was on a legitimate reporting trip and committed no crime.
The crackdown on the media that this case represents, there is truly no true accusation that can be leveled against Amir. He is a respected, balanced journalist who has covered both sides of the conflict. He's been picked up, and this is an arbitrary detention.
Zakaria Zalalem, a Canada-based Ethiopian journalist whose work has appeared in Al Jazeera, said, "Arrests like this drove him to sign an open letter calling on the government to respect media rights." He said 46 journalists were detained in 2021, making Ethiopia one of the worst jailers of journalists in Africa.
The general optimism that we had a couple of years ago with the much heralded reform, with the promises that journalists would be able to operate unperturbed, this has not panned out. The promises and the pledges did not materialize. And unfortunately, for journalists, the situation is starting to mirror what we saw in 2009 when Ethiopia passed its infamous anti-terror proclamation, which was used to round up journalists en masse. So we had to speak up about a very, very dire situation that our colleagues on the ground in Ethiopia are facing.
With little coverage of daily life in rebel-controlled regions like Oromia, the work of reporters like Amir is vital, says Zakarias.
Very few journalists have been able to gain access to areas under control of the OLA. And what life has been like for hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in these areas, much of which have been subjected to internet and phone outages, we don't have an accurate picture of.
Amir's lawyer, Tadele Gebremedin, says his client has been ordered to not leave the country until the case is investigated. He's accused of working with foreign media outlets and, quote, spoiling the country's development plans, end quote, through negative reporting. VOA reached out to the Office of the Prime Minister, the Communications Ministry, and the Attorney General's office requesting comment, but received no response. Phillips says it's important to shine a light on cases like this.
We will continue to cover the story of journalists who are unjustly held. This is not acceptable behavior. These are arbitrary detentions. If there is proof of something, then that evidence has to be surfaced and has to go through a proper trial process. It's something that is extremely important to us at the AP and to our peer news organizations.
For now, Amir is free, but the risk of arrest for those in media is ever present. Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now end the show with the song Okokoru by Kebas and Controller.
The pan this beat, the CM Records pan this song, Controller Kebas on this song. Right, yo, pick up on the honor, bitch to the management, represent to the fullest.
Okokoru, I'm ready, man. I'm gonna give you all of my time. Hold on, not touch it for real. You wanna make me feel this loving ambition. Oh, baby girl, I let me sana. I need a, I let me sana. I will give you all the time in this world, pana. Cause you say my time, my pana, baby girl, me a fender.
I do, I did best for you, girl. Love and affection, a true man, attraction, a really connection, all for you, girl. My touch, my calm, the last. I'm wondering if I get the fit, they call it. I saw him on my dead, so I'm with my
We've been listening to Kebas and Controller and the song Okokoru. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for taking time to be with us this evening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
What you want, what you want.
my mission. Call your decision. If you wanna get so close, I'm me make it.